our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Get up off your ass and get up on the podcast! Rich Police Radio! Rich Police Radio! Rich Police Radio! Rich Police Radio! Get up off your ass and get up on the podcast! Rich Police Radio!
All right, welcome to Rich Police Radio. I'm here with a guest who is new to the show, but definitely not new to the local music scene. And I think we'll probably get into a lot of the history here, just based on what this project we're going to be talking about is. But I think the best way to start this off is if you want to introduce yourself, give a bit of background about the band, and then we can go from there.
You betcha. Well, my name is Matthew. I'm the lead singer of The Remedies. We're a band of eight that have been around in different configurations for over a decade now. And we're working on our new album. Or we worked on a new album quite recently, and it's coming out very soon. I don't know when people are going to end up hearing this, but it's coming out in 2 weeks. So
cool.
Whatever that means to people who hear it, either in a month or 5 years, I guess.
Right. That's one of the hazards of the occupation here is that someone could hear it 5 years from now. But the good thing is, I mean, this could be their introduction to your band, right? They could be hearing this five years from now, and maybe there's five whole years of music that have now happened since this interview. So,
or maybe Maybe my son takes over singing and it's whole new thing in the future, right?
Right, for sure. Yeah, you never know. Yeah. And my kids are doing hosting this podcast at that point. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
But so I guess for background, I mean, I've definitely heard the name of your band before. I wasn't super familiar with the sound until I started listening to some stuff in preparation for this interview. Everyone hates this question, but how do you define the style of music you play? Because it's pretty eclectic. There's definitely some, to me anyway, sort of touchstone genres you're hitting, but there's a lot going on there. So do you have like a Coles Notes way of defining it?
Yeah, you know, I've heard you ask this question to other bands too, and they're ready with like a single word or like, you know, I was watching the Strawberry Punch one the other day, twee pop. I love that. It's like easy, it's simple, you get it. With us, it's always been, I've always kind of, you know, needed to use my hands a lot. You know, I always say it's like, it's party funk with a Latin rock edge, but we also have some hip hop and rap influence in there too. So it's really kind of all over the map, which I really get a kick out of.
Yeah.
At first, we kind of thought like, you know, we're making all these songs and, you know, there's a huge lack of cohesiveness from song to song in a lot of respects. But if we're making a Latin hip hop kind of song, that's what we're doing, and then that's the song. And then if we're doing more of like a synth pop song, which we've been doing a lot more lately, synth rock kind of influence, then that's the direction we're going. So it kind of depends from song to song in a lot of respects, but that's usually what I land on, is that kind of that wavelength.
Yeah, that sort of fits what I was thinking too. I mean, the funk elements, there's clearly some Latin elements at different points. There's hip hop stuff happening, there's kind of pop rock vibes as well in there. Was this always sort of meant to be this genre fluid of a project, or did you start out, you know, 10 years ago with something more specific in mind?
We kind of were really sticking with, okay, we have horns, we love horns, we're gonna do horns, keys, like that's the core sound basically. Yeah. With a lot of those like that, like Latin influence, like we really kind of started the band. Basically the jumping off point was when we had discovered the Cat Empire from Australia. They come to Winnipeg all the time. We go see their live shows, and we couldn't get enough of it. Right. And you put on a record and you hear, you know, the first song is a mysterious Latin song in Lydian. And then the next one is just a straightforward 4/4 pop song. And we loved kind of this idea of like, you're playing kind of Red Rover with an audience, from song to song, and just kind of seeing how often they're willing to kind of run to the other side with you. So that was kind of our jumping off point, really with a focus on that. And then it was mostly just realizing that we have, you know, eight different voices in the band, that started to kind of branch it out in different directions. And it was kind of also just a factor of like, what do we have access to financially, right? Can we buy a synth? We're buying a synth, so now we have synth in the music, right? It's like, that's just kind of the way she goes.
And I think that Winnipeg too has this tradition of kind of larger, I'm not sure if you would classify yourselves as this, but larger party bands that often have a horn section and have this kind of I mean, a good example, even though they're more specific to a genre, would be Apollo Suns, who just ended after, you know,
yes,
a really long time.
I mean, exactly.
Very high energy show, horn section. I mean, there's been like, there's just to go back every decade, there's one or two bands in the city doing this kind of thing. Even, you know, like some of the brass bands, which are definitely more stylistically their
own
thing.
Yeah, but Big Heist or, we always loved seeing Big Heist and Apollo Suns, Dirty Catfish, right? We would go see that and we'd go like, this is kind of what we're aspiring to, but you know, their musicianship was just out of control. We wanted to kind of try to cut through in a way that was a little bit different. So we kind of came with attitude and silliness, and you kind of really knew what to expect. So it was less about the musicality for us and our way. I mean, the first festival we played, and that ended up being our bread and butter, was doing the festival scene in Manitoba.
That makes sense.
The first festival we ever played in 2014 was like, how do we stick out amongst your, you know, big heists and your this and your that?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, we showed up with a kit of like Remedies brand wine, and we're just pouring it out into the audience and being silly and getting up in people's faces and running around. And I think our keyboard player, Liam, wore a chicken suit. It was like, if that doesn't help us kind of stick out, at least attitude wise, amongst the greats, then I don't know what would.
Well, I'm assuming
and
that
it ended up working.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I'm assuming that worked because you're still around, you know, after all this time. And that's maybe another question too, is just the longevity of something like this. I mean, you know, I was in a band with 10 people, back in the late 90s, was a ska band. And I know somewhat of the logistics of having a large group like that with, you know, so many people and horns and everything. But that only lasted like 2 or 3 years. This is a decade long you're doing this. So what has made this work? Because that's a lot of people to corral and a lot of voices, like you mentioned earlier, to sort of hear from and balance, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the main thing is that it's like we are at the base just a group of 8 fantastic friends, and that's kind of been the helpful aspect, is that we want to see each other above and beyond just doing the music. So the music kind of comes along with it, you know, hand in hand. But we kind of set ourselves this goal, and you know, me and Ray, the drummer, we've been in bands together since we were like 13 years old, and we always had like a once a week kind of baseline rule. It's like every Sunday night we're jamming, and it's, you know, for a while it was, you know, our punk rock band in high school, and then when that kind of faded away, we morphed a little bit, and now it's okay, it's every Sunday still, but now, hey, you know, Adam on trombone, who was our trombone player, Evan on trumpet, who had played a little bit with our band in high school, and we started to realize that there's like maybe something different to go with here. And then we've had members come and go, we've had sound switch ups, as we discussed already. So I think it's just like anchoring that kind of once a week we are friends and want to see each other anyways, and then going from there. Of course, that all got complicated kind of halfway through our run with COVID and everything.
Yeah,
but the music always kind of was what made us want to do stuff anyway. So at a distance, we started doing, you know, solo projects, right? Like Evan has a solo project, our trumpet player. He goes by Oven on Spotify if people want to check it out. Dave Barchin, our guitar player, and Barry Sax player, he's got solo material. Me and the drummer have solo material under the moniker Yaminky. Purpleton, me and Adam. So during COVID, we kind of just broke off into smaller bubbles, I guess, and just still kept that music thing going.
Yeah.
And I think that's just, as long as you anchor it, pardon me, in some kind of a way, whether it's you know, a once a week rule, or you know, anchored at least friendship and a love of music, I think it lasts, you know.
Yeah, I think so. I think that goes for anything creative too, right? I mean, just having that consistency and then wanting to do it, right? Once it becomes a chore, then you know you have a problem. But if you're still like actively wanting to see your friends and create this stuff with them, that's gonna presumably last as long as this has.
For sure, yeah. And I mean, we've had this discussion before too. Like, we want this to kind of exist for us in some capacity forever, right? We really get a kick. Like, making this record has been so much fun. Adam has fallen in love, again, the trombone player, he's fallen in love with the like mixing and producing side of things. And, you know, we'll sit together in a room, even if we're not, you know, rehearsing for a show on a Sunday, we're sitting together in a room on a Sunday and just listening to 5 different versions of a bass line and deciding which one works the best.
Yeah.
So we've all kind of just fallen in love with this process, and we don't see us letting go of it in any, you know, full capacity. You know, at some point we'll be, you know, octogenarians, kind of scrambling our way on stage and doing our one show a year.
It might
sound a little different then, but we'll see when we get there.
Yeah, for sure. So you got some time.
Show me how to move. Fall this dance in the darkness with my eyes closed, eyes closed, eyes closed.
Than a big flicker, sicker than a tick licking drips of anemic mix. It takes grit to inflict when you get no kicks. When it hits, breaking bricks, you can lay down in the sticks. Reckon up your knees is not an obstacle. Your technical proficiency's demonstrable. You can heck a logo, see the fucking constable. Then watch it on the TV at the hospital.
Look down from the lighthouse, we finally showed me how to move.
With the, mm-hmm. the sort of longevity thing, I mean, that's something you're addressing specifically with the title of the record. Obviously, this 10 years of being a band is an important thing here. What can people expect from this album that, you know, that is, it has either been out for years, depending when you're listening to this, or is about to come out? Maybe if they're familiar with your band from previous years and they're hearing you maybe again for the first time now, or they're new to you. I mean, is there something about the sound on this record that you feel sort of, I guess, how would you define, again, with these definitions, the sound on this record particularly compared to maybe what people may have heard from you in the past?
For sure. Well, functionally, the 10 years time title for the album basically is truly that. I mean, we, 10 years ago, 2016, we put out our first album, and it was made at home with very rudimentary tools. It was, you know, it's still on Spotify. It's it doesn't sound the best compared to what you can hear today, obviously. But it was kind of like our way of just generating a bunch of material. We were kind of excited about making music, and we had all this inspiration, and we were bringing songs into the fold. And it was kind of just a yes and, like, improv mentality at the time. It was like, hey, here's this song I made. Yes, and there's a rap at the end, or yes, and there's a cello solo or whatever, right? So we just kind of went crazy on that first record, and we were the last local band to cut a CD, and we were just giving away these, like, this dying technology to people, this, like, the last gasp of the disc era. And then we've kind of spent the last 10 years just kind of going back and forth and thinking, like, what do we do, right? Like, we want to make another album, but do people want to physically own an album anymore? And this
some
is
of
like
us do. Spotify. Some of us definitely.
Yeah,
do.
I know. I agree. we're thinking about the audience, right? Like, I want records. Like, I'm such a collector. I want records. I want my retro N64 games. I just want them in my hands, you know, right, like yeah. All that stuff. But with thinking about the audience, it's like, how did people access music anymore? And the CD, you know, you can't even play a CD in your car anymore. And we were just,
well, some
kind
of us
like
can do that
too, about,
so, but yeah.
That's true. Yeah, it depends. Yeah, I know. I had to replace my precious 2005 Buick, which had a beautiful CD player and beautiful speakers, but she gone now. She went to the heavens. So we thought to ourselves, okay, so maybe the move is we're doing singles. We just put out singles and they're digital only, and you know, nobody has to physically own the thing, and that way the music is out there. So that's kind of what that became our MO basically over the course of the last 10 years time. And then we kind of kept going back and forth on this idea. It's like, well, it doesn't feel the same as putting out a record. So we finally put our foot down and we said, we're doing another record, and it's been 10 years. So we're calling it 10 years time. So we've got this particular album is going to be a blend of some of the singles that we dropped kind of quietly over the last 10 years, as well as some remakes of songs on the original album that we thought really just deserved a better sound. And we've even got a live performance on there too, and a bunch of brand new songs too, which we're very excited about.
Cool.
That sound very different from what we used to do. So
cool. So that's kind of a nice mix. Yeah. Is do you feel like, you know, just thinking about the idea of releasing singles digitally, which is what a lot of people do now, right? Because, you know, the environment has changed. You know, there's still dinosaurs like me who are out here only listening to physical stuff, but then there's the majority of people who are using Spotify or whatever. And so do you, is it important to you to release an album that is cohesive as an album in this kind of era, like start to finish? Is the sequencing of the tracks and the order and all that, is that as important to you as maybe it would have been to a band 20 years ago? Or is it still something that you think about as far as how someone is consuming this whole thing potentially?
Right. Yeah. I mean, some of the obsessives in the band, like myself and Adam, and, you know, Ray and Dave, to a certain extent, we do still kind of consider that kind of thing, like, oh, the sequencing has to be perfect, and like, this is exactly the amount of empty space that has to be between track one and two, and all that kind of stuff, because we really do get a kick out of records. Like, I actually used to live with Evan and Ray. We lived together for years, and there was just constantly records playing, right? And we were like, wow, like, listen to how Genesis does that. Like, this song transitions into that one. You can't even tell where the difference is. And then, you know, you kind of log that away somewhere and you think, we got to use that in some capacity. Or like, oh, listen to this. There's two solos, and each solo does that kind of matches the other one, almost like you could put them on top. And we, you know, we take these ideas and we just kind of hang on to them. So we love the whole idea of a record, and we would love to turn this. I think the plan is to make this into an LP that people could actually have and own, which we would get a huge kick out of. We love the album art too. Kelly Jeffries is the artist. She did an amazing job. We think it looks super cool. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
It looks really great. Yeah,
it looks pretty funky, eh? So yeah, we think that, like, the project itself, again, it's kind of like a rejection of cohesiveness, but from song to song, that is. But that's kind of always been our MO. So in a way, it's cohesive with who we are as a band, but very much so. You're going to hear, like, you know, a synth pop song in 5/4 right when the record opens up, and then with a rap in it, and then the next song is basically a Steppenwolf song, and that's kind of just the way it goes, you know. And then the song after that is basically a funk song where the main hook is you're never going to get this money, which isn't serious at all. And that's another part of what we love. It's like, you know, some of our lyrics are a little bit more kind of cryptic and mysterious, and that's kind of like Dave's influence in a lot of respects. And then some of them are very much tongue in cheek. Like, a lot of the upcoming stuff is going to be pretty tongue in cheek. So we love that.
And that also makes for more fun at the live show too, right? I mean, people are there to have a good time anyway because of the upbeatness of the whole thing. And then they're hearing funny lyrics too. That helps with the whole presentation. Yeah.
Eyes deceive me, oh so well. You're not the first to say I'm witless. You're just the first to use it as farewell. She got that special badness.
She's so, so bad. She's so, so bad.
She got that special badness.
She's so, so bad. She's so, so bad.
She's got no method to her madness.
She's so, so bad. She's so, so bad.
She got that one of a kind sick mind, that special badness.
She's so, so bad. She's so, so bad.
Like these songs, now that they have been committed to this record or re-recorded for this record, or now that this is coming out, does this sort of mark an endpoint for you where you can now focus sort of exclusively on newer stuff, or are some of these older songs still finding ways into the set or still finding ways to be reworked, or just because this seems like a project that encompasses, you know, 10 years, right? So is there like a new starting point for the band after this, or does it just continue
absolutely
the same way?
I think the 10 years time thing is also almost, again, tongue in cheek to a certain extent, because it's like, yeah, 10 years to cut a record. That's like the pace of the band, right? And it's like, we have really kind of locked into a system that works for us for recording. The new material that we recorded for this actually happened way faster than anticipated, which is great. You love when it happens that way instead of the opposite.
For sure.
So instead of it being this kind of slow pace where we have a song, we work it into the set. It's in the set for a long time while we're quietly recording in the background, and that mixing and mastering is just taking forever. We've really kind of locked in, and we have a ton of new material that we're jumping off from after this. So this 10 years time is kind of one encapsulation of an epoch, as it were. And then next we've got we're going to be laying down a suite, actually. We have a three-part suite, very mystical, very synth desert rocky in parts, a nice 6/8 like open kind of gospel influenced portion, and some more of that Latin flair that we'd love to do. So that's going to be another big project for us, and I think that one is going to be maybe not a physical release, but it's going to be like a kind of capsule release all together under one theme.
Cool.
So yeah, we're kind of gonna be a little bit more, I think, experimental moving forward, but also a bit quicker, right? Like this whole, we're not gonna take 10 years to do another one, right? We're not gonna be sitting together here in 2036 talking about an album, right?
Well, you say that now, but
I guess we'll see.
So if someone's listening to this at the time this comes out, the album is imminently going to be released. What are the details of when this is being released? It's obviously irrelevant to someone in 2036 who's listening to this, but people listening right now, what are the details?
So basically it's available everywhere online, Apple Music, Spotify, etc. We're looking at getting a Bandcamp set up. Everybody's always talking about Bandcamp. We feel like dinosaurs in a lot of respects. Like we do the Instagram thing because we kind of, it's like a necessary evil of sorts. We're kind of like, same mentality as you. I'm sure in the 90s you were stapling up those those posters. We love to do it that way. So honestly, if anybody's just walking around the city of Winnipeg, they'll probably find our poster, and that's probably the best way to get their hands on this record is just by scanning the QR code. There's still always tech involved in
there
some
is,
respect.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah.
But unfortunately, we kind of like we just find that to be the best way to do it. We're not trying to get this like massive reach by doing daily, reels where it's like POV, you just discovered your favorite new Winnipeg band. It just doesn't feel authentic to us. We'd rather just hop on our bikes and put out some posters. So if they keep their eyes open for the Remedies album art, and that's going to be the case moving forward too, they can just scan it and get their hands on the project that way. And then down the line, definitely going to do an LP release, because there's nothing like having it physically, right?
Yeah, for sure. But that's to be determined, I guess, the date of when that happens.
Yeah, I was talking to Tate from Boss Conscious, and we were just discussing that it's kind of like a bit of a complicated sea to navigate, finding exactly, because you want to find a way to print it at a reasonable cost with reasonable numbers, right? You don't want that price break. It's like, if you get 500,000, you can get them for this much a unit.
Then you have a basement full of records just for the next.
Yeah, exactly.
Years,
nobody's spitting on these records forever. Yeah, exactly. Coasters, frisbees, whatever. So we want to find something that's like good quality and just do it right, if we got to spend the money, we'll spend the money. And we're not really looking to make money off of that. It's mostly just about, in the same way that doing streaming is, just getting the music out to people, right? Yeah. Like our intention is probably just to give them out at shows. If someone's like, hey, I got $5 in my pocket. All right, here you go. Here's a record. It's like, as long as people can have it and hear it, that's really what matters to us.
Yeah, that should be the goal, I think, for everyone, right? I mean, if you're making art, you want people to experience it. Otherwise, what's the point?
That's right. And I will add on to that we are very privileged in the sense that, like, this is not our main thing, our main source of income, I should say. Like, a lot of bands, it's like, that sounds almost like an insult, right? It's like, we're pushing our records because we're trying to make money doing this. And all the power to them, and huge respect for that. We have our day jobs. And then, like I said, we have our little Sunday nights where we're doing this and making our music. So.
And I think that's fairly typical. I mean, I'd say out of the, 1,000 and whatever people I've interviewed, like 900 and something of them are in that situation, right? Most local bands, have to have this other source of income because it's not easy to be a professional musician. Some of them are, and it's fantastic to see. But yeah, for sure. Like a lot of people are in the exact same boat and trying to do the same thing. So I think people understand that, especially here in this city where there's, most people have to have other sources of income.
Yeah, I think that's almost what gives Winnipeg music scene its flair too, is that you can tell that people are doing this for the passion.
For sure. For sure.
Kind of above and beyond, like for the bank, which is kind of nice to see, like you just see these people and it's like, my wife works in healthcare and this song was inspired by her. And as you just hear about these, like, these professional lives that are just kind of couched behind a rock and roll band, and it's kind of like, it's kind of cute in a way, and I love it. I think that's really what gives Winnipeg its flavor.
I think so too. And I think that I've heard other people explain it as sort of the authenticity that a lot of Winnipeg bands have, in that they're just doing this, like they're doing it because they want to, not because they have to. And so the realness of whatever it is that they're saying or delivering kind of bleeds through.
Absolutely. 100%.
Well, I mean, whether that's serious or humorous or whatever, like that, you can just.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's real, at least. Yeah, totally. I know sometimes I've found that where it's like I'll go to a music festival and it's a kind of a daunting place to be. There's lots
Sure.
of lights and there's people shouting and doing all sorts of things, and there's these little camps, and it looks like almost like a little Neolithic encampment where, I mean, it's like if I encroach onto this, am I, how does that even look? And that's especially how I felt in the kind of the early days of showing up at these festivals. But then we would take the stage and it's like, oh, now this is where I feel natural, authentic. Whereas before I was just kind of that guy kind of roaming
Yeah.
around, looking for a place to be, looking for a conversation, looking for the porta potty, whatever.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Something like it.
So if someone is, if this is someone's their introduction to your band, what's the best way to find you online? I mean, whether it's next week or 2 years from now, where should someone go if they want to A, hear your music, and B, you know, find out about upcoming shows or whatever else is going on?
Usually we're pushing that on Instagram. Again, Necessary Evil. We actually do have a little bit of fun of like trying to get creative with like what we're posting and how it looks and things like that. But that's most of what we're going to do. I think Instagram just like auto dumps onto Facebook as well. So if people follow us on Facebook, they'll see that stuff too. Again, posters around the city. Like whenever we do a new project, we always like poster it and hope that gets some clicks and some views and stuff like that and gets the music out to people. And then as far as for like performances, we're always playing in the summer. We're playing at the Bell Tower. Well, depending on when people see this, we're playing at the Bell Tower on August 21st.
Okay.
In Osborne Village. So it'll just be a free open air show, and we'll just be kind of lighting up the street side. So people can either stop by and listen or honk at us as they drive by and shake their fists. We're doing a secret show in the woods this year.
Oh, cool.
Also, that's on August 22nd. So it's at Grousen Point. So if anybody's in the Lac-Da-Bonnie region, I guess it's not a secret anymore.
No, you just
August 22nd. Yeah, exactly. August 22nd, Grousen Point, out in the woods. So that's where we'll be.
That's cool.
The coordinates will be posted on Instagram, I'm sure. And then we're actually going to be doing a UMFM live studio performance, which I'm really looking forward to. That's going to be on October 18th. I'm not sure if it's live, if you can hear it on October 18th, but either on or after October 18th, we'll have some live stuff. And that's where we're going to be premiering some stuff that's beyond this record, some stuff that's brand new.
Cool. And those are always great too. Those live sessions they do, like with the video and everything. Yeah. And it's perfect. Yeah.
Love them. We actually did one. It was actually Howard Manshine, if you can believe it, was helping set us up when we were in high school.
Oh, yeah.
This band of ours. It was not an impressive band, I'm going to tell you right now. But he helped us out, and he got us some shows at like, you know, Saffron's and Mona Lisa's, like the little restaurants around the city. And then he got us on UMFM. And I still haven't found that recording, but I would die to find that recording because I'm pretty sure my voice cracked like 100,000 times out of nerves. But yeah, I mean, the man gets it done. Am I right?
Did he still have the very affected radio voice the entire time?
Oh, God, yeah. He would call the house and he'd leave voice messages. I remember we gave him an album, and then he calls the house and he like leaves a message and he's like, "Hello, Matthew, living with the disc. This is truly something." It was unbelievable, living with the disc. And I never got over that. I just thought it was so funny that this man is calling my house.
Yeah, that is pretty good.
And then he gave the traffic report on the phone, of course.
Of course.
Of course.
Right on.
I should also mention that for shows, like, we don't have anything booked just yet, but we play Festival de Voyageur every year. I'm a Francophone, love French to death, and the culture that bears it in Manitoba. So we always play in Festival. So we'll have some kind of show for that too in February, if people are watching this before February.
I assume they probably are, but yeah. But that, I mean, that seems like a perfect setting for you too. I mean, like a band of your size with your instrumentation and like that kind of vibe, Festival seems like a ideal spot for it, right?
We absolutely love it to death. Yeah, it's super fantastic, and they've always been very kind to us and everything. So we're kind of like, I went to French immersion schools, and that's how I became Francophone, as it were. And yeah, there you go. So it's kind of like they've been very kind to us in that respect, where it's like we are not exactly francophone as it were, like Franco-Manitobain, but the fact that we kind of like celebrate French speaking and French culture in Manitoba alongside all this other stuff that we do is kind of like why we find ourselves on that stage, and we love that to death.
Feel. Spinning my coaster like a DJ scratch. Drop a loony on the map for opportunities that might catch some luck, make my karma dutiful. Looking for some funny pharmaceuticals. Getting tired of the dissociation. I feel like an innovator from the alien nation. Chairs are up, but the light's still on. Trying not to think that I'm too far gone. Cutting inhibition, 80 precision. Imagined eloquence, victim to the fission. Collision, bubble cars, electric and air flags. Cadillac malfunctioning airbag. Crawl from the wreckage, no worse for the wear. Like a fairy tale ending, you're still there.
Out while that demon And then they get mad when the shoe don't fit. Cause through that glass look fractured and dismal. Stark contrast manufactured whimsical. Now close that book. You and me walking home barefoot.
Your echoes die between these crooked walls. All askew. They managed to sneak out. Everything.